And the second reading this morning comes from John 1 through 5. It says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And he was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it." Thank you, friends, for welcoming the stranger. Advent is a time of prayer and reformation of the heart. So today, I'm going to tell you a story of a gender transition and a reformation of my very own heart's story. It starts with my prayers as a six-year-old. Well, wait a second, let me preface that. Did anybody grow up in the South besides me? Nice. So there's a few of you I know a little bit about growing up in the South and what religion might look like. I did grow up in the evangelical church where you either went to heaven or you went to hell, regardless of what you were doing. Those were the two places you were going with whatever it was you did. So, for those of you who don't know about the South, for the women, growing up in the Assembly of God church, women did not wear makeup. They did not wear pants. They did not cut their hair. They were to be seen and not heard. They were to put other people first. They were to be subservient to their husbands. And then for the men, the list is a little shorter. Have the hair above the collar. Make sure you provide for your family. And be the man of the house, which means everything under the roof you own. At the same time I was getting these messages, I also stood reading a book about a man who wore a dress and didn't cut his hair and was technically a homeless brown guy preaching radical love and acceptance for all. And the people just started listening to him. How many of us have a little Jesus in us that we might be afraid to show? Men, make sure your dress isn't too feminine or you'll be called a sissy. Women, make sure you're not too butch or you'll be called a tomboy. Somehow that very essence of who we are is put in these little boxes. And what I understand about little boxes is that's our delusion of safety wrapped in a box. But that's another sermon. Back to my prayer of that six-year-old. Every night I had to bow my head, kneel at the foot of my bed, put my hands together, and say my prayers out loud. One night I asked my mom, "Mom, do God only answer out loud prayers?" She's like, "No, honey, God answers all prayers unless you're a bad person." "Mom, am I a bad person?" "No, honey, why do you think you're a bad person?" "God's not answering my inside prayers." "Tell me your inside prayers, then I'll pray them with you, and then hopefully if we're both praying, God will answer your prayers." All right. So, Mom, every night before I go to sleep, I ask God to make me wake up a boy or not wake up at all. That sweet demure that coaxed that still silent prayer into my outside voice turned on a dime and sharply said to me, "That's the devil. You'll go to hell for that prayer." So for the next 32 years, I was given the opportunity to learn lessons of depression and abandonment and attachment and pharmaceutical drugs and PTSD and hostile work environments and toxic relationships, but mostly I learned the lesson of listening to that still small voice inside of me. Continuing in the manner of this spiritual abuse, I also heard things like, "God loves the kid who gets good grades," "Hate the sin, love the sinner." That one particularly hurt. "You'll go to hell for this, you'll go to heaven for that." And then the one that I also heard at 6 years old, "God doesn't love fat girls." Life was about my salvation, and my salvation dangled on how good or bad I was. My very salvation was dependent on whether or not I can control my impure thoughts. And who was that determining this goodness or badness? And was it worthy of eternal damnation or just corporal punishment? The double whammy, which I like to call the shaming change, the shame changing, was when spiritual damnation and corporal punishment were wrapped together. Here's what I know to be true for me today. Change equals death to the way I have always done it, so that I can be reformed inside my heart. This shame changing is no longer a wound of my childhood, it is merely a scar. Part of my spiritual journey has also been reclaiming that side of me that was all I was told was occult, which is my Native American roots. I'm Cherokee. Learning about the earth, our mother, in the time of winter, the leaves change, the top that we can see goes dormant so that our family of plants can grow their roots. And a strong plant that grows its roots gives us a big burst in the springtime. Anyone suffer from allergies? Hello, God. I have a new appreciation for what used to be such a time of suffering. We actually have some control over our suffering. Where I come from, we call that a reframe. So here's my reframe on allergies. I'm so sensitive to the Divine Mother, I cry and sneeze and sniff and scratch my eyes out because of the sheer beauty of her earth, life coming alive again and again and again. Every year, this cycle repeats. Every year, the new lessons we learn to reform our hearts. Anybody ever ask themselves, how long is it going to take for me to learn this lesson? How many times am I going to make this mistake? We get the opportunity to learn and learn and learn by growing our roots. Going into one of the hardest roots I had to take out of my garden was depression. Looking into depression, what I realized was that was me taking on who other people thought I was. I tried to fit inside that body that other people told me I was. And when I stopped listening to the others and started listening to that still small voice inside of me, depression turned to survival, and we're all built to survive. If we just look at the word depression, to depress, the act of lowering something, pressing something down, it can also look like caving. How many of our animal friends cave during the wintertime so that they too can grow their roots? Are you seeing the little connection we've got going on? So in my going within, what I heard was, I'm created in the image of God. God is neither male nor female. Oh, right. That other story, ashes to ashes and dust to dust, this body dies and stays here, but our soul goes on. You've got my attention now, God. Then one night, with a handful of pills and a glass of water and some divine intervention, I raised my eyes to the heavens, and I literally said out loud, I don't understand this body that I'm trapped inside of. If you can't help me understand this, I'm coming to meet you. And what I heard was, when you're already in hell, there is no place to go. And then my phone rang, and I had to put down my glass of water because it was my sister, who never calls me, and it was 2 a.m. Are you okay? Yes. Are the kids okay? Yes. Why are you calling me so late? I just needed to talk to you. Divine intervention. That night, much like Jesse, I trimmed my branches even with Mother Earth, and the only shoot I left was that still small voice that I just knew was God. That night, I lost my religion to find my faith. I was so afraid to enter that castle called my heart, so afraid to ask for what I wanted, so afraid to be authentically and wholly who I am. It's kind of like we have this beautiful mansion that we've spent so much time building, but we sleep on a blow-up mattress in the front yard, and we put a portalette on the curb, and we think that's who we are because that's who other people think we are. And one day I turned around and I opened up that castle door and I went inside and I found out who I really am. And I got past all of my shame and all of my guilt and all of my dishonesty about who I was, and I let go of ego and I stepped into faith and said, I think I got this right. I hope I got this right. Part of losing my religion to find my faith was also throwing out the book of should. I should do this. I should do that. The book of two. I'm too fat. I'm too short. I'm too this. I'm too young. I'm too old. And then I threw out the book of enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not educated enough. I'm not that enough. And what I was left with what is. I was only left with what was. In all of my messiness, I stopped beating myself up for past mistakes. Anybody beat themselves up for their mistakes? Yeah. Anybody ever say what you say to yourself to somebody else? We would never say those words to somebody else. With that chatter quiet, it allowed me to open the doors of all of my fear. I used the archetypes, my wounded child. I looked at my wounded child. I looked at my victim. I looked at my saboteur. And it was when I went into the house of my prostitute, when I got to the bottom of my prostitute in my marriage, I realized that I was selling my soul for the security and the safety of our income. And as soon as I understood that, I asked for a conscious uncoupling because I had to unpack hell to even ask for a divorce. We had been toxic for years, more years than I have fingers, and we were miserable. Me for thinking I was going to hell, and her for thinking of a yet another failed marriage equaled hell. Religion was on top of us both. Today, I'm still opening every door of fear of who I am and asking the hard questions because the next story I got to in the Bible was, to thine own self be true. I felt like I was lying to the world, which I was also going to hell for. Now, what was going to send me to hell first? Not being authentic to thine own self or for lying? So I had to step into my faith again, and I stepped out in the hope that I made the right choice listening to my still small voice. Going down the path of getting to know myself and standing in my truth, guided by my still small voice, having faith that God has a plan, I could only do this because somewhere deep inside, to the core of who I was, I can't even explain it today. Every time I got to that low point where I thought suicide was the option, what would come to me was this song from my childhood. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. No one can put our light out unless we let them. We're called to love our neighbor as ourselves. It even says it's one of the greatest commandments, to love ourselves. I started loving me one smile at a time to a stranger, then one thank you at a time, then one conversation at a time, then gratitude for each person I saw through the eyes of a child. Delighting in each moment with no, they should look like this, they should look like that, they're too this, they're not enough that, all of that was gone. And as I was able to see me through those same eyes of compassion, life was being breathed into me with so many folks around me. Thank you, Janie Spar. Looking back to my days of suicidal ideation, here's what I know. I didn't want to die. I didn't want to die. I wanted to be the person God made me to be, and I didn't know how to do that until one day I stepped into my faith that still small voice in me is actually who I am, and I trusted that. I wanted to be fully and wholly wrapped in God's love. Through the fires of transformation rising from the ashes, my own heart was reformed when I started to know thyself. Here's a small picture of who I am. I'm a simple guy with a servant's heart. I'm walking through the journey of becoming me. Many trans people will come through this part in very different ways. Most of us will lose most of all of our friends. Check. Most of us will lose all of our family. Check. Most of us will lose our partners. Check. Most of us will lose jobs. I lost three. Check, check, check. This is where I stopped. It also says that I'm going to live below the poverty line. One day I was on a street corner with a paper cup and some loose change, trying to get down the road so I could say my story one more time, beating myself up with all that language that keeps us on the street corner. And divine grace is all I can say. I stepped into an understanding that I actually grew up to be a straight, white man. The power and privilege that comes with those descriptors is immeasurable. I've spent the better part of the last 2 years trying to find that voice anew. And understanding the power and privilege I grew into, I realized it was my duty to speak up for the least of us. 57% of transgender youth will attempt suicide when there's no parental support, and that number drops to just 4% when one parent supports their child. And the irreconcilable differences, 90% of the time, have to do with religion. When a trans woman of color steps into her authenticity, her life expectancy has just dropped to the ripe old age of 35. My duty as a person of power and privilege is to step up and speak for the least of us. And that's how Trans Heartline House got started. I spent many years not feeling safe. In 2016, when the bathroom rage bills hit the streets of North Carolina and beyond, my former wife and I were traveling the country in a camper, promoting her business. I moved through the world with passing privilege. This just means it wasn't obvious to the people around me I was a trans guy. After the bathroom bills first came out, there was an air of hyper-awareness in bathrooms where there used to not be much at all. It literally meant, as a 40-something-year-old man, I was afraid to go take care of the very natural needs for fear of somebody listening to how things are different when pee hits the water. I stopped eating and drinking before we moved our camper from place to place. When we would park, my anxiety level would hit the roof, and it started the day before. And then as the bathroom bills became more the rage, then it was 2 days before we had to leave, and then it was 3 days before we had to leave, and then it was when we parked, I was afraid to leave the next time we were leaving. I also got the privilege of learning the lessons of what it means when your spouse doesn't support you, but thinks that she is. I got, why are you scared to go to North Carolina where we're working? You pass good enough. You pass good enough until I don't. Then what? That fear of being killed in a bathroom was what led me to the 10-hour surgery I was afraid of having that would create congruence with who I knew I was. So back to my servant's heart. What a better way to serve than to step into the gifts that I've been given. Most people wouldn't think being trans is a gift. I get to see it as a gift because it's through this gift that I get to serve others. And so in opening Trans Heartline, we have a safe, affordable post-op recovery house for folks who come to town for gender confirmation surgery. You're here for 3 weeks minimum, completely vulnerable, and even when you leave the hospital, you need 24/7 care for an additional 2 weeks. I didn't want anybody else to have to go through the fear that I went through when recovering from surgery. It was a great pleasure for me on November 20th, just a couple of weeks ago, with the help of so many people just like you, that we, 1 year to the day of the very first meeting, opened the Trans Heartline House. We actually have our very first guest staying with us right now. Standing in my fear to stand in front of you all is also a gift. If it's the gift of how we take care of others inside of the house. So I want to thank you for welcoming the stranger in. We have a sign-up sheet in the back, and there'll be one downstairs. If you would like to stay in our email list or get on our volunteer list to come in and just, when I'm out like this, I need somebody in the house to just be there in case there's an emergency. Little things like that where we all can just stand in and be the hands and the feet. I want to finish up today with saying thank you. Thank you. Thank you for letting me stand up here and know in my heart this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. My hope is that when you leave here today, you all do the same thing. Let your light shine. No darkness can overcome your light that God gave you.